Jackson Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Wendy Gillette in New York. Police say nine people celebrating the Lunar New Year were killed in a mass shooting late Saturday in Monterey Park, California, east of Los Angeles. Police did not share much information, only that the shooter was a man and that it happened in a business. Here's CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman.
This incident occurred at around 10 to 10:30 last night. A Lunar New Year celebration was taking place in Monterey Park, which has a very large Asian American population. That's when gunfire occurred.
The Justice Department took possession of more documents at President Biden's home. Correspondent Stephen Portnoy has more.
The Friday search of the president's Wilmington home lasted longer than 12 hours, and Mr. Biden's personal lawyer says it was kept a secret from the public at the Justice Department's request. The attorney says federal investigators found six more documents with classified markings. We're told some of the papers date back to Mr. Biden's time as a senator.
Today marks a monumental anniversary for the landmark Supreme Court decision on abortion. CBS's Robert Costa reports.
50 years after Roe v. Wade, Vice President Kamala Harris will be in Tallahassee, Florida, to deliver a major speech on abortion rights.
Around 100,000 demonstrators are protesting in Tel Aviv. Angry about Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's new far-right government. Tough words from Ukraine's leader, correspondent Christian Benavides.
On Saturday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said the world needs to stop Russia's efforts to block Ukrainian food exports.
This will be at least 200 million people in different countries who now have decreased access to food.
A judge makes a ruling in a case against two paramedics charged with killing a black man, Allison Keyes reports.
An Illinois judge has ruled that two paramedics charged with first-degree murder and the death of a black man should stand trial. Prosecutors say the two strapped Earl Moore Jr. face down on a stretcher so tightly that he suffocated. Body cam video of the medical personnel caused an outcry. Moore had called 911 and the paramedics were told he was suffering from alcohol withdrawal. The video shows them slamming him forcefully onto a stretcher. The paramedics face up to 60 years in prison if convicted.
Chris Hipkins becomes New Zealand's 41st prime minister, taking over from Jacinda Ardern after last week's shock resignation. And with an election just 9 months away, he says there's a lot of work to do. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Did you know you can get your prescriptions for less at your local pharmacy? You can with GoodRx. It's the free app that can save you money on your medications. Just search for your prescription, choose the pharmacy and the price that works best for you, and then show your GoodRx coupon to your pharmacist at the drop-off counter. GoodRx works at over 70,000 pharmacies, including Walmart, Rite Aid, and Walgreens, and it works whether you have insurance or not. It's easy to save. Next time you drop off your prescription, check GoodRx. To start saving today, go to GoodRx.com. GoodRx is not insurance.
If you're a business owner, imagine getting up to $26,000 per employee. There's still time to file for the Employee Retention Tax Credit Program. This program is for business owners who continue to pay their W-2 employees during the COVID pandemic. All business types and industries may qualify. You can claim the credit even if you received a PPP loan. The licensed CPAs and tax professionals at DH Tax and Consulting have been serving business owners across the country for over 15 years. Call us now at 833-ERC-FILE. That's 833-ERC-FILE.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably. Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Cloudy skies today with highs around 26. Northerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Lows level off around 12. Tonight, mainly cloudy. Chance of flurries tomorrow. Highs level off around 29. Overcast skies. Temperatures above average Tuesday and Wednesday with highs in the upper 20s. Chance for snow Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 20.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Hello, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. Welcome back. I am here every Monday night, 7 to 8 p.m. on WAUK, 540 a.m., 101 FM. As you know, we've been on for a year now, and we are here primarily to talk about how to continue to move Wisconsin forward. What are we going to do to make sure democracy stays alive? What are we going to do? And what can we, each of us, do together to make this a better place for our, not only ourselves, but our kids and our grandkids? I know last Monday, it was really like a fun Monday because we're all celebrating the Packers crushing the Vikings. But tonight, we are here at the end of a Packers season, but I am very, very fortunate to have Senator Chris Larson with me, and we're going to talk about what the Senate and the Democrats are going to do to try to make Wisconsin a better place, even though the Republicans and, frankly, the far-right Republicans still control too much of our lives. So welcome, Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mark. Happy to be here. Good to be back.
Awesome. Awesome. Is it okay if I call you Chris, or do I need to call you?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, save some time. We can do that.
Well, I appreciate it. But, you know, I got to ask, right?
Yeah, I've been Chris before I was senator. I'll be Chris after.
That's right. You know, I'm just a lawyer. I'm just sitting here, right? But hey, let's start out. We have one of the biggest items on the table is we have $6.5 billion sitting on the table that it needs to be allocated for the public. So how do you see this issue? Where's the money going to go? Where does the far right want the money to go? Where do you want the money to go? Because I think a lot of people are sitting there going, right, this is our tax dollars. What are we going to do with it? So,
right. Yeah, no, it's a lot. And I think it's, you know, especially with the Mega Millions getting way up there over $1 billion, you know, everyone's kind of got their eyes thinking ahead to what we could do with those funds. But this isn't something where we have to, you know, win the lotto. We already have it. It's just a matter of what we, the people, want to do with it. So we've been asking the public. I've done that in a few different forums, putting it out there on social media to hear from my neighbors directly about where they'd like to see it go. And for the most part, You know, you get every once in a while you get a wild outside the box idea, but for the most part, people recognize, hey, you know, we should go and fund those things that we had said we need to tighten the belt on, and saying, oh gosh, we can't afford this because of the economy for the last, you know, 10, 15 years. So that includes making sure we restore funds to K-12 education. If you actually go back and look, if we actually kept pace with inflation of where the per pupil funding was, 15 years ago, once the first recession hit, when the housing bubble burst, we would have to increase the per pupil funds across the board by $3,000, right? That's not just for urban districts or just rural districts. That's across the board to make sure we just kept pace with inflation because of the cuts and things that have happened between there. So if you look at that, that's the first thing we should be doing. Making sure we're funding special ed, matching it at the same dollar amount that voucher schools get for special ed. Otherwise, local school districts have to make up the difference. So that's a big chunk of it, making sure that healthcare is more affordable, making sure that we're doing once in a generation infrastructure changes that sometimes require local match, being able to have the state come in and do those matches for folks to expand infrastructure at the local level would have a huge amplifying effect. But even after that, right, then we can look at something like a tax cut or doing something long term that actually, you know, will rally folks and maybe find some Republican votes along the way.
So what is or what are the Republicans in the Senate? What are they thinking on these issues? What do they say about spending the money on education?
Yeah, I think they say they want to get something out of it, right? Whether that be, you know, giving more subsidies for people who send their kids to private education is the one that comes to the top. They usually call it, you know, school choice, but really what that is, when you expand school choice, it usually just gives a subsidy to people who already send their kids to private schools. Last time they expanded it, it was over 72% of the kids that were getting a taxpayer-funded voucher or taxpayer-funded money, they were already sending their kids there. So that's something that they're looking at. And then, of course, the other thing is they want to give more money for rich people. You know, it never quite trickles down, this in trickle-down economics. It's more, let's give more money to the top, and at some point in the future, maybe it'll get down to us. So that's where they want to do this, what they're calling a flat tax, which would just be a huge giveaway to people who are rich and paying the highest amount because they're making the most. The rest of us would probably not see a break, and if anything, it would end up freezing the system in a way that would underfund K-12 education, underfund the universities, underfund roads and infrastructure, underfund public services and shared revenue, which I know you know what it means, but shared revenue is the funds that goes to the state and then it's supposed to be shared out. It would cut all of those things once, you know, we hit the recession, which frankly, most economists are saying we're going to see in the next year or two.
So before we get into some of the specifics, shared revenue, I want to go back to this sort of the beginning starting point, this notion of a flat tax, because it did come up in the last governor's election, right?
And yep.
But I'm going to date myself a little bit here. I was a steel worker from 1976 to 1984 in Indiana, right? So I was a union rep. I worked swing shift around the clock. This is, you know, big steel, inland steel.
Mm-hmm.
But even back then, this disparity on the income gap hadn't even got close to where it is today, or the gap between the very, very wealthy and average folks that are just working. And I remember discussions I had when we first talked about the Reagan and Reagan's taxes with my fellow steelworkers, right? When they started talking about, let's do tax breaks, I would talk to them about, you know, Eisenhower was a very conservative Republican, a general, helped mm-hmm. us win World War II. But they taxed the wealthy at 90%, and the wealthy were still always the richest people in America. But they did help create a vibrant middle class in the 50s and 60s that created this public school system and our highway system. I mean, really created the infrastructure for a middle class to survive. Why is it that we can have Republicans talk about a flat tax where the very, very mega wealthy don't pay a penny? They're not carrying any weight in this. How is that possible in today's world?
Right. No, I think that there's a collective amnesia by both, unfortunately, the media and by those that are running circles around them. I mean, you talked about where we were back in Reagan and what things were like under Eisenhower and those tax rates. But there's been a steady decline in what the rich have paid, which is why you have these monstrous discrepancies in what the rich have and what the poorest and frankly what the middle class have. And that's just because of the way it's not, you know, any new brilliance or any new inventions. It's mostly just financial maneuvering by their on their behalf of spending money to try and get more elected officials who will then give them more tax breaks, right? And I could bore your ears off where we go over, you know, how they after 9/11 they did the Bush tax cuts that benefited the rich long term. They did capital gains deferral in 2011 here in Wisconsin. They did Act 10, which ended up costing working class folks across our state, where they had to pay more for what they had, and that did not benefit them, did not benefit most of us. At the same time, they did something called the Manufacturing and Agriculture Tax Credit, which basically wiped away the liability of most big manufacturing and agriculture mega ag in our state, so that the rest of us would have to pick up the tab. On top of that, I mentioned the vouchers where they give the tuition deduction, and they gave the voucher expansion. They did an income tax cut by reducing the brackets back in 2013. This continued on, of course, and then at the federal level, they did the only big thing that Donald Trump did, the only signature piece of legislation he ever passed, was the Trump tax cuts that benefited the rich to the point where it jacked up the federal deficit, and only the richest benefited of it. So all of that, of course, is something that has only benefited them. And now they're coming back to the trough and saying, you know, all of those tax breaks sure are nice. We sure could use some more tax breaks. Well, the rest of us, you know, we've seen what does that look like. That means there's less funds for schools, that's less funds for roads, less funds for medical advancements. You know, people can still go bankrupt if they get the wrong diagnosis at a doctor because we have not, we don't have a healthcare system. We have a system that preys on the sick and the feeble. All the things that we could have as a shared society and a functioning democracy, we don't have because the rich people want more, you know, and look at what they're spending it on. If they're not spending it on lobbyists, they're spending it on rockets that go to barely space. They're spending it on tax havens. They're spending it on risky financial instruments. And we're not doing better as a result of it. So I think we should be investing that directly in people. And frankly, we shouldn't engage with even flirting with the idea of giving another tax cut for the rich while people are suffering so much and poverty is continuing to climb.
You know, I think the it isn't just a boring list. I mean, that was... Frankly, thank you for sharing that summary of the giveaways. And the reason I asked that is because you made this comment that the Republican leadership in the Senate want to get something.
Right.
And, the get is, you know, frankly, individually, they're not getting the break. They're delivering for someone else. Because clearly... You know, when you're talking about the wealthy, I mean, it's, as far as I know, we don't have a state senator that has their own space rocket. But hey, folks,
not yet.
The attorney Mark Thompson. I am here with State Senator Chris Larson. We'll be back after the break to talk more about what's happening in Madison as we go forward. Be right back.
We'll be right back.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Parents, we know we can't protect our kids from everything. Eventually, they're going to bump their heads or scrape their knees. But we can protect them from six types of cancer. HPV, or human papillomavirus, is a common, preventable virus that can cause cancer later in life. The HPV vaccine prevents human papillomavirus and all the cancers it can cause. The American Cancer Society recommends getting your sons and daughters the HPV vaccine starting at age 9 to protect them later in life.
Don't search through the phone book for hours looking for help. Don't waste time being transferred from department to department looking for answers. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, simply dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Free and confidential information and referral is available throughout central Wisconsin. Dial 211 and get connected and get answers.
Remember when you could turn on the radio and hear a song you'd never heard before? A song that would make you tap your feet, snap your fingers, maybe get up and dance a little? A song that once you heard it made you say, that's a surefire hit. Those days are gone. Or are they? Tune in on Sunday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. and catch Seth Faces the Music on WFHR. The premise is simple. Every week I pick a theme and find songs that fit the theme. It's so simple yet so, so good. Join me, won't you, for Seth Faces the Music every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio WFHR.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Welcome back, folks. The attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night, 7 to 8, WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM. And I am here tonight with Senator Chris Larson. Before the break, we were talking about the $6.5 billion surplus that has to be decided or allocated in Madison. And touched on the fact that there's some Republicans that want to go to a flat tax, which just means giving away more money to the folks that don't need tax breaks, the very, very mega wealthy. But let's talk about the opportunities in terms of public education. What could the money really go to? Senator,
yeah,
up to you.
Yeah. For sure. As I mentioned, if we actually kept pace with inflation, per pupil across the board would be $3,000 per pupil more. I don't think that that's going to be what comes through. I think there's going to be an effort to get something higher to try and match that for our schools. And this is a crisis mode. And I think that most, and I think I can say this, but most schools probably won't, right? And the reason is because they want to put up a good front. But the fact is that we're losing good teachers. They're getting poached, right? And moving district to district. Those that are the most mobile are getting the most out of it, which is not the way that it should be. We should end up investing in teachers to be invested in kids long term. And this is hurting not just urban areas, but rural areas as well, where they are seeing a decline in enrollment, where there is risk of some of these school districts shutting down. So by making sure that we are putting those funds forward, increasing the per pupil across the board so that everyone benefits, I mean, that's a huge investment for them, and also making sure that we're bumping up the commitment to special ed. Public schools end up having a higher proportion of students who need special education. If the state is not funding them in the commitment that they're supposed to, then those funds have to come out of the local coffers. So that's something that absolutely needs to happen. The state can fund it. We are lesser if we don't do it. And this is, you know, I think of some pretty great quotes, right? If you don't fund education, you're funding ignorance, right? Or I think of a post that I put up on a quote from a speech that Kennedy gave in Nashville, Tennessee, where he talked about the folks who try to shake their fists at intellectualism and those who are looking to better themselves and to explore science and explore the unknown and, you know, shoot for the moon, as he did. And the quote that I posted is, "Only an educated and informed people will be a free people." And that is foundational for our democracy. We've seen the results of what happens when people are fed ignorance. They'll eat it, they'll follow it, and it leads to the decay of our democracy. So not to be too hyperbolic, but I think if we are not investing in the next generation, we are investing in the failure of our state.
So let me, you know, I noticed there were so many referendums by municipalities to raise money for schools.
Yeah.
That seemed to me a sign of the stress that the current Republican majority in Madison has put on municipalities. And not just, right, not just Milwaukee, right? I live in Milwaukee. You represent part of Milwaukee, but you represent Cudahy, Oak Creek, St. Francis, South Milwaukee, and parts of Franklin, right? Parts of those. So am I reading it right? Or, I mean, do we have communities under stress?
Yes. I mean, it's a, to put it succinctly, but if you, you know, if you want the details back, this last election, I believe it was over 90 different referendums were on the ballot for a total of $2.2 billion, right. 85% of those passed. So if you think about those in terms of the dollar amounts, right, we talk about, oh, we have this, you know, it's approaching $7 billion in an overall surplus. You don't really have that extra money if you are underfunding your kids, right? It's like talking about taking a grand worldwide vacation while your kids don't have books and are not able to get a basic level of education. And this isn't a one-off. We've seen the number of referendums go up. Back in 2020, in the April cycle, there's 57 school referendums totaling $1.73 billion. 91% of those passed. And so this is a continued crisis because that is the only means that they have to be able to raise revenue because the state continues to say, tighten your belts or punish them, right? In light of historic problems, in light of learning loss that was well recorded, and in light of the federal government, Joe Biden and the Democrats trying to put forward money that would flow to make sure that schools would not be would be able to survive through the pandemic, Republicans used that and passed a historic double zero, which was $0 per pupil increase in the first fiscal year and then $0 per pupil increase in the next fiscal year, basically guaranteeing that schools would fall further behind, that students would fall further behind. And so when the test scores show that, when school scores show that, instead of saying, you know, yeah, this is you don't invest, this is what you get. Unfortunately, they're using that as an excuse to continue defunding public education and trying to punish them, which, you know, I get that school funding can be confusing. It can be hard to follow. But if you think about it in terms of a family, if you have a child that's struggling, you know, you can't punish them into learning more. You can't just say, well, we're just going to keep you in your room until you figure out how to learn how to read, learn arithmetic and can figure out how to do all the things that we need to do in a society. You have to invest more time as a parent. You have to invest more time, maybe pay for a tutor to make sure that they're caught up and that they're functioning. As a state, we unfortunately have been doing the opposite of just punishing. Now they don't have the excuse of saying we need to tighten our belt because we don't have funds. They can't walk around like the Monopoly man with their pockets turned inside out. At the same time as they're saying we're going to give tax cuts to the rich, we've got the funds to invest in our kids, and that's something we absolutely need to do.
Thank you, Senator Larson. Look, folks, coming up on another break, we're going to come back with more from Chris Larson. I'll just a public disclaimer here. He is my senator. I did vote for him, so there is a bit of bias.
Oh, thanks, man.
This is Attorney Mark Thompson at the Paul Revere Show, WAUK 540 AM. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Lights, camera, action. It is time for your close-up with WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's. Listen to WFHR every Friday morning at 8:30. We'll play a quote from a famous movie, name the actor, character, or movie, and you'll win two value baskets and two concrete mixers from the superstars at Culver's in Wisconsin Rapids. Join us Fridays to be WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm, built for real life.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually my husband. He just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope. To give them hope that mom is going to be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
All over America, people are taking the national radon test. Have you? Answer true or false. Radon is a radioactive gas. True.
I didn't know that, no.
True or false? The Office of the Surgeon General recommends that all homes be tested for radon. True, your home should be tested. True or false, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. True.
I'm gonna dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crudités at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were crudy takes.
Crudies takes. See, man? It all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
If you're worried your friend may be struggling, remember, you don't have to be there to be there.
You can say how while you will get a fake tattoo. You can ask with an app if it works for you. You can write him a text or knit him a sweater. If you can't be together, you can write him a letter.
Whatever gets you talking.
Chat on the game, kick off your flip-flops. You can ask on your couch while you binge watch. However you do it, you gotta ask a friend. And if they don't share, you can ask again.
Whatever gets you talking. Whatever gets you talking.
Reach out to a friend about their mental health. Learn how you can help at seizetheawkward.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Cloudy skies today with highs around 26. Northerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Lows level off around 12. Tonight, mainly cloudy. Chance of flurries tomorrow. Highs level off around 29. Overcast skies. Temperatures above average Tuesday and Wednesday with highs in the upper 20s. Chance for snow Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 20.
Hello, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here at WAUK 540 AM 101 FM every Monday night, 7 to 8, talking about how to move democracy forward, how to move the state of Wisconsin forward. My guest this evening is Senator Chris Larson. Hello again, Chris. And we were talking before the break about some of the issues that are coming up in Madison with the $6.5 billion surplus and how that's going to be divided up. And we talked a little bit about this flat tax, but there's also been a lot of discussion about local sales tax, shared revenue. How do these issues play out? How are they politically teed up? And what are the Republicans doing and what are the Democrats doing on these issues?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we will see. There's a lot of discussions right now about what's going to happen with shared revenue. And again, you know, for listeners, this is a deal that happened back, 40 years ago, or actually beyond that, when the collection of income tax first started in the state, they said, well, the state will collect income tax to prevent local communities from doing their own. And so they've been prevented from doing that. And the idea was once the money comes in, then it will be distributed out to local communities. So the state would be the pass-through. And for the most part, you know, back when this first started, 90% flowed through and went back to the local communities. State just, you know, had a very, very small role in it. Local communities closest to the people is what was doing it. That has shifted. That has shifted tremendously in a lot of ways, and I won't bore you with all the details. But frankly, it really shifted 12 years ago when Scott Walker became governor and the Republicans took over, and they decided that they were going to restrict local governments from being able to fund services, even if they are local elected officials who neighbors put into office to make their decisions for them. Wanted to be able to increase taxes to fund things, you know, like civic projects or improvements to their roads or getting rid of lead pipes or, you know, you name it, or having more parks, right, more walkways. All these things were, this was restricted to the point where only communities can only raise revenue to the point of new growth or inflation. And that was it. So it was punishing those cities that had grown or communities that had already were already pretty big. And then they've said, oh, we'll make up the rest in shared revenue. That sure as heck hasn't happened. What you've seen, and I already mentioned the referendums, we've seen referendums increase across the state by local communities trying to make it up just to have operating funds to be able to hire police, hire fire, you know, be able to have public safety, much less all the other things that they do. So they've started to figure out that they're not getting their shared revenue. So there is a movement afoot to try and figure out local revenue or to be able to get something, right? Whether that be an increase in a 1% sales tax or using 1% of what the state already collects and giving it directly to local communities. You know, how that will be distributed, that would basically pretty close to double the amount of revenue that they're getting in shared revenue. But the details are still being worked out on all of this. It would be, I do think that as much as, you know, Republicans, we haven't mentioned it, but Republicans have very much gerrymandered themselves being into power, regardless of how voters feel about them. At the local government level, it's all nonpartisan. So it should not be painted with a partisan brush. And a lot of these folks, while they might be Republican, they might be Democrat, they might be independent, they're struggling and they're having to explain to their neighbors why the state is not giving their funds. And I think they have a lot of power to be able to say, hey, you give us the power to be able to do this. If you're refusing to give us the funds, you're strangling our communities. You're preventing growth, right? You're making it harder to bring, to grow, to bring and keep young people in the community. And that's what's at stake. So those are all the negotiations and things that are happening in a fever pitch. Between the towns, between the municipalities, between the counties, and frankly, between the school districts, to say the state should stop, you know, being a de facto caretaker, pretending that local communities can't figure this stuff out for themselves, and frankly, treat them like adults and let them to be able to thrive.
So, you know, You mentioned a lot of these communities are in, you know, more red purple areas than blue purple areas. And I use that because the Wisconsin is a purple state in my mind. I mean, that's why we're a swing state, right? I mean, that's why the whole world press shows up in Wisconsin on big elections, because it's a close call.
Right.
So, I mean, a lot of these communities that are getting squeezed are in more red purple areas. How are they, how do you see that playing out with the far right Republican leadership in Madison? How's that going to play out?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you're right. I think for a while now, they've been isolated purposefully, right? Where, you know, if they're in their rural community, they're not in contact with lots of other rural communities regularly. And so I think a lot of it, there's a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of mentality, right? Essentially saying, well, we can make it work. We can make it work. We'll be strong. But now that this has been going on for 12 years, and especially at a time where, you know, frankly, Republicans are going around beating their chests and saying, look at all this huge surplus. We're going to give another huge tax cut to the rich. You know, local communities are saying, wait, you've been telling us to tighten our belts and have been lording over us for a decade plus. And we've had to go to referendum after referendum, and you're saying our books aren't balancing. It's time to make sure that those funds actually come here. And I think that there's a real effort for those, you know, to take a lesson. You mentioned your background as a steel worker, to take a lesson from unions, to be able to band together and say, look, we all demand better. All of these local communities, all of these rural communities across the state deserve better, right? You may be able to treat one in a bad way and expect to get away with it. But if you're doing that to all of them, as they've been doing, I think that there is a sense that, wait a second, you may say you're looking out for us, but the spreadsheet isn't saying that. The dollars and cents aren't showing it. And communities are struggling, right? They're seeing it in shrinking class sizes. They're seeing it in shrinking populations. They're seeing it in roads that are falling apart. And frankly, you know, they're seeing it in terms of more of our dairy farms continuing to shut down in the state, Republicans refusing to do anything about it. So when it comes to and rural, not to mention rural broadband and access to the, you know, to the digital future, all of these things, they're getting a little bit frustrated. And I think if they realize it's not just this is not a partisan thing, that this is something where in a bipartisan, shouldn't be a partisan thing, where Tony Evers should be able to come through and work with Republicans to get something done. But, you know, if Republicans are going to choose the wealthy and choose what they call the flat tax over giving them what they deserve, then they're not going to get it. They're never going to get it.
Yeah, I mean, then they'll just continue to starve communities and starve our kids. Let me ask, in terms of, because you said this is all going to be coming at the public very quickly. For people that are listening that want to try to watch this shell game, what should we be watching? What should we be looking at? The budget or, you know, what? What should we be paying attention to?
Yeah, I mean, we're a month out from when the budget's going to come out. So we do have what's called the State of the State. I think most people are probably familiar with the State of the Union. But we've got State of the State, which is happening in just 2 weeks on the 24th. So in that, that's usually a chance for the governor to preview some of the things that he's going to be coming out with. And then I think it's just a couple, 1 week after, 2 weeks after, 1 week before the election, the primary for Supreme Court, the day after Valentine's Day, we'll have the budget address, and the governor will come out with his proposal. So all that will be coming out over the next few weeks. But there's, you know, watch the papers. This is where all the discussions, all the trial balloons start getting floated.
Have you seen, just yourself early on, any of the trial balloons that are being floated?
Yeah, I mean, some are good, some are bad. You know, I think that I already gave you the broadest outline of where things are, and I think it's just a matter of political positioning of what's going to come out at the very end of all of this.
So you touched on the fact that we have a primary on February 21st.
Right.
For the municipal elections, judges, and the biggest race out there is the state Supreme Court race. I want to focus that on when we come back on the break, but teeing up to that, we do have this tight timeline, mm-hmm. right? We have February 21st is the primary, and then April 4th is the election, which is supposed to be nonpartisan. You mentioned these municipal offices are nonpartisan, but people are really electing school boards, right?
Right.
We're electing all the people that are going to be making these decisions. Have you got a sense from your, you know, you're in a lot of different communities, what the debates are locally on some of those races, and what are the key issues, if not the budget, or, you know, how's that? What do you see as sort of the hot issues for municipal elections, setting aside the Supreme Court race?
Right. Yeah. Outside of the Supreme Court race, which I think we're going to talk about separately.
Yeah.
I mean, at the school board level, right? This is where the rubber meets the road. And I think what's interesting is there was a big swing and a miss by, you know, Rebecca Clayfish and those around her who were trying to say, let's go after our schools and talk about things that weren't even being taught there, and trying to get people worked up in a tizzy talking about CRT and all these things that weren't actually happening. And there's a realization, wait a second, you know, there is a universal frustration with how the pandemic played out. But as frustrating as it is, there's nobody to blame, right? This is something we went through as a species, as an entire planet. And you can't use that as a Trojan horse to try and get in some people who are going to destroy public education. So time and again, a lot of those people ended up swinging and missing and not getting into office. So now there's a recognition of, well, let's actually get out of schools what we want, right? Which is, what can you do to shrink class sizes, make sure that students have the attention that they deserve, making sure that they have the teachers that are paid enough to make sure that they can turn around and give the attention to those kids that they need to thrive. These are the things that people talk about at the local level. And of course, at the judicial level, right? Even at the municipal and the county level, where all those judges are up across the state, there's a recognition that the courts overstepped their bounds last summer, right? And it might not be that abortion cases are hitting municipal level or hitting the circuit court, but this is front of mind, because suddenly a fundamental right that we had assumed was not going to be stripped away was pulled out from underneath people after 49 years because of the ideology of people who were in judges' robes but acted as politicians. So I think there's a recognition that there's a lot of judges out there who may try and hide behind a robe, but in reality, they're wearing political stripes underneath it. So I think there's a big distrust, and people are asking a lot harder questions of the judicial candidates that I've talked to. But you'd have a sense of it too. I think you're no stranger to courtrooms.
Fair enough. So the before we go to the break, part of the, and we'll be tight here, right? We have the governor and his appointees, and you got 30 seconds to answer this. The Republicans in the Senate didn't confirm the governor's appointees. What's going to happen this time around? Ten seconds.
I think Republicans know they have to at least do show hearings and give a few of them a vote. But it's on us to hold them accountable and trying to push the better ones through.
Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. I am here with Senator Chris Larson. We will be back on the other side of the break. This is The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, Forward Wisconsin. We will be back on the other side.
Hey,
Hello, music lovers. Tim the Polka Guy here to let you know the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show is moving to a new time slot, 12 noon every Saturday. So join me for the best in old-time music every Saturday at 12 noon right here on the new WFHR 97.5 FM and AM 1320.
Let's face it, life looks a little different. During these times, we're doing our best to keep our minds and bodies strong. And getting a flu shot helps us stay healthy so we don't miss out on what matters. Like having game night at home. Yeah, can't do that while sick with the flu. Now imagine family movie night that your daughter can't live without. Well, that's ruined. And don't forget your uncle's socially distanced cookout. See? That's why it's important to be at our strongest. Every year, millions of people in the U.S. get the flu. Especially now, no one has time to miss out on moments that matter. So get your flu shot. Find out more at getmyflushot.org. Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw, WAUK, 540 a.m., 101 FM. I am here with Senator Chris Larson, and we're talking about how to move Wisconsin forward, and we have these elections coming up in the spring, and we have the newly seated Senate Assembly, new governor, lieutenant governor, and we're coming into a big election in April for a Supreme Court spot. It's a swing spot that's going to be addressing key issues, right? I mean, you've talked about gerrymandered and how the Republicans have virtually locked up control in the Senate and the Assembly because they rigged the maps despite the fact that the state votes, you know, much blue or purple. It's got to be pretty red purple, you know, to have a vote in Madison currently and for the last decade. So before we get into the Supreme Court race, you know, there is a race, a special race for the What is it? The 8th district?
Yep.
So there is an attorney, Jody Havish-Sinkin, right? I think that I pronounced that right. She's running for Senator Alberta Darling's spot, who is no longer there. And the key on that is that's really sort of very important for the Senate, right? So tell the listeners, why is that race sort of really important for everybody and whether you live in the district or not?
Yeah, I mean, this is huge right now after the election happened. And I think it's worth mentioning, and I'm glad you brought it up, that we ended up, even though we are a 50-50 state, right, the closest U.S. Senate election in the history of U.S. Senator elections in our state, right? The 100 years since we've elected them. And then, of course, beyond that, you know, the governor's race coming down to the wire again, although Evers won by a larger margin than he did 4 years ago, still very close. Right. But even in that 50-50 state, nowhere was there any discussion or even chance that there was going to be a chance that Democrats would take the Assembly or the Senate, and that's completely because of the rigging of the system through map drawing by Republicans, where they invented a whole thing, which, you know, we could spend the rest of the time talking about, but we won't. But regardless of that, there's a chance, and the real thing to know of it is that the state Supreme Court is the one that intervened and accepted the Republicans' invented artificial creation of saying, oh, we have to keep as many districts as close to what they are as they were, which is completely invented. There's nothing like that in the state. There's nothing like that in the country. Right. In fact, we encourage change to make sure that it's adjusted. And frankly, its incumbency should not matter. Right. It should be up to the people.
Let me throw in this. Let me just throw in as a lawyer here, right? For the public listening. This issue of the constitutionality of partisan gerrymandering went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, look, we're not going to intervene. We're going to let state Supreme Court states decide the issue. Right? Because there had been a decision out of Wisconsin that said the maps in Wisconsin were unconstitutional under federal law. Meaning the rules of elections were so unfair, this wasn't a democracy, right? So, I mean, the people need to know that. Our current maps, a federal court made up of Republicans and Democrats had said it was unconstitutional because it's not fair, because the people, even if you vote blue, you can never have a blue assembly or a blue Senate. So,
right. And as frustrating as it is, it's the alternative is to say, oh, gosh, well, I guess we can never change it. The other alternative is to fight and say, OK, we have to work harder than ever to make sure that we actually do have a functioning democracy again in Wisconsin. And with the state Supreme Court, right, that election is happening the same day. We'll get into that. But this is actually there is trends, right, that are happening where because of the increased extremism by Republicans. Of embracing, you know, this proto-fascism of overturning election results, of not allowing people to actually have equal say in a democracy, and because of this tendency to just favor the rich, there's more and more people who are shifting and recognizing this, right? The extinguishment of rights of women to be able to have control over their reproductive future. This has gotten more and more people to shift. So this is a district, you know, forgive most listeners if they didn't memorize the state Senate map, but the eighth, it's area north, the north suburbs of Milwaukee and the area north of that. And that is a district that has trended further and further. In fact, there was one of the only Democrats to win a red seat over the last 10 years was Deb Andraca, who's a state rep in that district. And the rest is continuing to shift. Jody Habish-Sinikin is an amazing candidate, right? She comes from the Habish family, so folks know that name. But she is somebody who's earned her stripes as somebody who's an environmental lawyer. She is somebody who's been active in causes. She very firmly believes in reproductive freedom for everybody. And as a mother, as somebody who's prioritizing good education for all of our kids. She is somebody who's a leader in her community, and she is a great, she's going about this as a happy warrior, somebody who's plugging away at the phones, getting out there on doors, and is somebody, you know, this is a district that Tony Evers lost by a small margin, but we have been able to show when people work together, they work hard and they know the facts, they're able to win these special elections. We've done it before in the 10th, and this is one we absolutely can win with people's help.
We can win it and help Tony help protect his vetoes. So
right. Okay. Yeah, right now this is the seat that will determine if the state Senate has a veto-proof majority or if it's one where it's going to be a little bit closer.
Right. So, folks, that's tied up then with this, as Senator Larson said, the Supreme Court race, where that swing vote will decide these issues of gerrymandering, of abortion rights. So you have 30 seconds, Senator.
Yeah.
Sum up for the listeners why this race is a must register and must vote race.
Yeah. There's three justices on this court who said that it was all right and that Donald Trump continue to try and push his wild conspiracies the last election cycle. 85 courts across the country said they don't have a case. This is one where it's going to be determined. So we have a chance to take it. We've got to work hard to do it.
Folks, thank you, Senator Larson. Folks,
thank you, Mark.
Come on back next Monday night. Paul Revere Show, where we're talking about how to move Wisconsin forward.
Everyday people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need.
Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5.